Filmcore.
Welcome to another Halloween edition of the Filmcore podcast. I'm Alex Kirschenbaum in LA, joined by my pal Emily Schick in Chicago. Hello, Emily.
Hola.
And we're here to talk to you belatedly about the movie It, starring Bill Skarsgård as a terrifying clown that eats children. So, Emily has some talking points for us to unpack the flick. Emily, I'll give you the floor.
Yeah, so I just think that this is one of the most interesting horror movies that I've seen in a while. Always the deeper the themes are psychologically or politically and socially in a movie, the more intriguing I find it. And I think that this one hit a lot of those points for me, which is why I loved it so much. One of the most compelling talking points about it is how Derry stands in as an allegory for victims of abuse who are all experiencing a collective trauma and feel unheard and unseen. And violent, because I think that is in not only the movie, but I believe in the book. And I think also in the miniseries, although I have not had the privilege of seeing the miniseries, unlike you.
Yes, I have seen the miniseries. Fantastic.
Do you see that in the miniseries at all? Or
do you see
I
what?
Thought it wasn't that good.
No, it wasn't that good. I was just kidding. It's a delight, but it's not good, particularly. It's okay. It's kind of bad. But Tim Curry is really funny. Just for people that haven't seen it, but for some reason listening to this podcast, Derry is the town of Derry, Maine, where these seven kids get this gang that calls themselves the Losers Club. There are roughly – they're 11 in the books. I think they're like 13 in the movie. They get terrorized by this spooky clown one summer, and through some research they discover that their town of Derry – is
did you just call Pennywise spooky?
Spooky clown.
He is beyond spooky. Okay, he is
merely spooky.
He's psychotic.
Well, I mean, he's not like a person. He's like an evil alien creature. Although that's not really, they don't really go into that much in this movie.
Right, they don't. I mean, I know from researching it obsessively after seeing it, that he is an eternal being.
Yes,
but. Yeah, that's not touched on so much in this movie.
And he appears every 27 years to terrorize just the people of Derry, Maine, in this small town. So this movie takes place in, like, 1989. So I guess It Chapter 2, which is going to come out September 6, 2019, will be taking place in 2016, starring Chris Pratt, presumably, yeah, as Ben, the portly kid.
Indeed.
I was going to say, but also, okay, so in your research, we should get back to the issue of collective trauma and Derry as the genesis of that. But, real fast, in the research, I'm sure you might have uncovered the fact that it is an eternal being, sort of like this evil demon spirit. But on the flip side, sorry, a Pennywise, you know, but on the flip side of Pennywise, a force of good created in the ether at the beginning of time was this, like, massive space turtle. Did you hear about this? It's in the book.
Right. There's the turtle. I know that in the book, the turtle, any appearance of the turtle or the presence of a turtle around Pennywise is, like, Pennywise's or its kryptonite, right? Like, it's kind of a totem. And, yeah, a force for good. And I haven't read the book. Yeah, sure. But through, well, it was mostly my boyfriend doing the research. He, like, found the thing about the turtle and then went back and looked at, you know, articles that pointed out the turtle appearing in the movie. And kind of subtly, like, in little Easter egg ways, you know, appearing. And then, of course, Pennywise is, like, nowhere to be seen. The turtles.
Right, of course. Yeah, but literally, like, it's just a giant space turtle. I don't know what happens to the space turtle, but I guess it maybe manifests in other turtles in this town. It's just all turtles and turtle iconography. Like, is a picture of a turtle, like, symbolic of the force of good that is the space turtle? Like, it's unclear. The rules are unclear. But I'm really excited to read the book. We should do a book club. I would be super down, but it's daunting. It's 1,100 pages, and there's another thing in the book that we can tackle later. But let's go back to the dairy main as a as this hotspot for as an allegory. That's cool. Yeah.
Right. I mean, my question was: did you, from seeing the miniseries, first of all, do you agree on how, you know, it's an allegory in this movie? And then, out of curiosity, did you notice it being used that way, or did you see those underlying themes? I think they're really gracefully and kind of subtly, but really gracefully communicated through this movie. I'm just curious as to if the mediocre miniseries at all touched on that.
Yeah,
or
it
had those themes.
It did, but it was, you know, it was pretty clunky. I think the miniseries could have just been shaved down into a movie and just extracted a lot of fluff, and it would have been better. And the acting is very melodramatic by most people, except for Tim Curry, who's pretty amazing as the clown. It's worth watching just for Tim Curry. He's great. The makeup's great for his clown, and like the practical effects makeup is pretty good too. But yeah, Derry is sort of, they don't really, like, the movie does a better job of heightening the trauma of the kids and making it feel like all these creepy adults are sort of encroaching on them, and that they're all connected through their issues and their fears. But the movie or the miniseries it's very superficial in terms of it doesn't have a lot of subtext. So I don't really know if they were. I think the themes were in the book, and I don't think they were super explored. They're just kind of present. Like, they still have the abusive family members and stuff in the movie, but in the miniseries rather. But it's not doesn't feel like it was super deliberate. It's just, it feels like they're trying to be true to the story without giving it any subtext.
Right. It was just interesting to see how Stephen King's commentary on, he's done this before in other stories, and the movies had some kind of like social commentary behind it. But what you notice in the movie is that all of the adults are just terrible people.
Yeah.
And in, you know, different movies, there's no single adult that's portrayed in a positive light.
Oh.
Whatsoever.
Really?
I mean, if you think about it, like, if you break it down,
like,
try to think of one adult in the movie that was actually on their kid's side or seemed to be, like, listening to or hearing them, you know, or understanding. Like, for example, I mean, just one of the very first ones, which I noticed this in the movie, and I was like, WTF, that woman has to know something. So there's this old lady who's watching Georgie from the second story of her house.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they show her. I'm sure you remember this. They show her looking down at him, peering into the sewer. And they kind of linger on her. You know, they show her reacting. You see kind of some semblance of like, uh-oh, like she has some kind of knowledge about, and she's an older lady, like some kind of knowledge about what's about to happen.
Right.
And so I'm thinking, you know, what might happen in the scene is that, like, just as he's getting pulled under, she like opens the door and starts running out or tries to say, no, don't, you know, or like run away, child.
Yeah.
But she does nothing.
She's complicit.
Literally nothing.
Yeah.
Totally complicit. And so I remember turning to Tomas in the theater and being like, oh my God, that old bitch totally let it happen. Like, as soon as he got his arm, you know, ripped off by the eternal being, I was just like, And that old bitch watched the whole time. Didn't do anything. And then the next time you see an adult, it's Bill's dad who's basically telling him that, like,
he's like, shut up.
He needs to just stop. Yeah, shut up and stop thinking about your trauma.
Yeah, like, get out of his room. Like, don't, yeah, don't investigate the sewers.
Stop trying to, like, bring your brother back. He's fucking dead.
Yeah.
A little phrase a little differently, you know, minus the cussing. But yeah, I think it was just really interesting. How, and then, I mean, just got the creepy pharmacist, the hypochondriac kid's mom, who's totally, like, just ruining his life by trying to keep him sheltered and giving him gazebos.
I'm glad that you mentioned them next to each other because, like, they look the same. Like, their faces look the same to me, right? And they have the same glasses. Deliberate casting, I think.
Overweight, yeah, kind of just, like, dumpy and creepy looking.
And the same faces, like, the exact same sort of, like, mole rat face.
Right. Ugh, so gross. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting how that in and of itself is a statement of, like, kids having to kids just being kind of unseen and unheard. And there's a kind of parallel, I think, there with other writers and creators who've always portrayed kids as, like, the good, the force of good. Or at least, you know, an adult is antagonist or just, like, absent. And that's, you know, Roald Dahl is who comes to mind, like, if you think of all of the stories. The adults are all basically the villains.
Yeah.
And the kids have to either, you know, save themselves, save each other. So yeah, that kind of weaving that into the narrative, but also kind of underlying commentary about adults being predators and adults either knowing about abuse of young people happening and, like, again, not doing anything about it, or perpetuating it. Because one of the most chilling moments, I think, or just chilling parts of the whole, like, kids and their fears manifesting within Pennywise and or Pennywise using their fears to, you know, show them in his own form, like, the scariest thing to each of them. It's the abusive, creepy, like, you know, sex predator dad, that Bev's dad, that is, like, literally, you know, Pennywise takes his face and superimposes it onto his own body.
Right, yeah. That was pretty creepy.
Anyway, I'm talking a lot. So creepy.
I love the one kid. Hold on, I'm gonna go back to the Wikipedia page. The one kid that did I leave the Wikipedia page? I did. The kid from the CBS show Me, Myself, and I. I don't know the character's name, but I will go back to the Wikipedia page and find it. But anyway, that little guy. He's the one that was terrified of. No, was it Finn Wolfhard who's terrified of clowns, or was it? Yeah, no, yeah, it's Finn Wolfhard's character, Richie.
I think it was Finn Wolfhard, yeah. Whose name in it is Richie.
Yeah, Richie. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Richie, Stan, Ben, little portly one, Bev, Eddie, the sickly child, or quote unquote sickly child.
Right.
And then Bill, who's Georgie's brother.
So I was thinking of Jack Dylan Grazer, who's Eddie, but I think he's not the one that's afraid of clowns. He's the one that's afraid of being sick, so he has the leper approach him and stuff.
Yep.
The hobo
the leper. Is, like, gross, unsanitary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty interesting, because that's also, I mean, a fear instilled in him by his mom. Right?
Yeah.
Like, a bogus that's kind fear. Of the thing. He starts to, when they all start to kind of strengthen, I don't know, you probably notice this too in the movie, when they, as the movie's progressing, as the arc is kind of, like, you know, picking up, or I guess, like, peaking, you notice every single character becomes stronger and more able to face up to their fears the more interactions they have with Pennywise. Like, each child, in their own way, kind of gets a chance to look their fear in the face. And, well, actually, I don't know if each and every child does. But I definitely notice Eddie does. I mean, he stands up to his mom, basically says, like, you've been lying to me this whole time. And it's to get definitely strengthens. I mean, she's, like, the strongest character in the whole movie, and she really does, more than any of the other characters, like, actually attack her own fear straight head-on with the top of the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Every kid has kind of an abstract, like, actual, like, an abstract fear. If you think about it, like, well, Bill, for him, I think his fear manifests in the fact that, I mean, you know, the most common thing that Pennywise chooses, because Pennywise is psychic, right? Like, Pennywise chooses to represent himself as, and, like, trying to scare the kids. He always shows Georgie. Like, he knows that that's what's going to attract him, but also, like, that's how he can convince him, Bill, to, like, let his guard down. Then there's Richie's Afraid of the Clowns, right? Stan is afraid of that really creepy painting.
Yeah.
But this is what I was going to say, yeah. Is kind of weak. For me, like, I think, of course, a super creepy painting, but it's like, really? That's the only thing he's afraid of? Like, what about, you know, like, he's the son of a rabbi, right? Like, something related to that, or, like, religion, or, I don't know, it just could have been a different fear, I think, for him. As well, that painting, again, was super creepy. It's like, really, that's the only thing that he's afraid of is just that painting.
I thought it was creepy, but I also didn't think the CGI manifestation of it when it comes to life wasn't... I just didn't think they did that well. It wasn't super scary.
Yeah. I thought it was super creepy. I mean, especially with the teeth. My God. I was like, why? First of all, what is a super creepy painting doing in their house? Who put that there?
Was in his office, and right? Also, it's in the rabbi's office. His dad, the rabbi?
Was it in his... Oh. Dad's office?
Yeah, but it's in, like, the temple.
Huh. Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, I guess I was just, like, confused about, like, the significance of that painting then. You know? Like, it's creepy. Physically creepy.
Yeah, why would you have that in your office? Yeah.
Right? Like, mark it in your office. But, like... You know, who is that woman supposed to be? Or, like, is she supposed to be anybody? What's the whole deal with that? That just was a kind of a hole for me in the movie. But then, you know, you have, like, I think the really good, like, kind of just very cool way that his fear manifested, Eddie's fear manifested, was in the leper. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, it was funny. That's the thing. I thought a lot of the scares were good, but also, like, funny, because they felt like it really felt like they were childlike with their fears. And I thought I never thought the idea of a clown was super scary. It's, like, a little creepy, but it doesn't. I don't know. It was never, like, something that freaked me out as a kid. But I just like that it freaks them out so much. It's kind of funny.
Like, yeah, clowns have always creeped me out for sure, but they've never been Pennywise creepy.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Mike's hallucination of the hands, his parents' hands, like, that was really powerful too.
Oh yeah,
like, burnt bodies.
That wasn't as funny as the
right,
the leper. Yeah, that was kind of sad.
It's funny. Pennywise is pretty brutal, pretty cruel. What were you saying? I think I interrupted you. Sorry.
I don't recall. I just thought it was such an awesome idea. Just a terrifying demon clown from space. And it was made in 1986, the King book came out then, which means that he was at the height of his, like, coked out insanity. So,
oh God.
It explains some of his thinking. But what else was it? Really quickly, some of the other contenders for the role or, according to Wikipedia, Hugo Weaving, who was Mr. Smith, Agent Smith in The Matrix, Mark Rylance, who won an Oscar for Bridge of Spies, which came out a couple years ago, a Spielberg movie. He plays like a Russian spy.
It would have been amazing.
Tilda Swinton.
I really want to see that. I think Bill Skarsgård was incredible. I thought he was one of the absolute highlights of the movie for me. His creepiness, I think, was most potent in the first scene where we meet him in the sewer, the Georgie scene, the infamous Georgie scene. I thought he was just incredibly, incredibly scary because it was so subtle. The way that he was scary.
Yeah.
It was just in the way that he kind of, like...
His eyes?
Said, like... Yeah. Oh, my God, his eyes. Take and he it. Shuts down after he's doing the popcorn. Little, you know, jokey jokes with Georgie.
Yeah.
Trying to lure him, and then he just kind of goes shark-eyed for seconds. Ugh. Yeah, I thought that was just really well done, even though it was incredibly violent. But the build-up to it was just what I think made it so... brilliant, since, you know, there's no score, no nothing, just the sound of the rain and them talking, and like you just don't see, you know, the 50,000 teeth sinking into his arm coming at all. Like, it's very like quick.
The miniseries was on ABC, so they didn't show they showed him like beginning to bite the hand, but they didn't show him ripping it off, or like the kid without the hand falling to the street. But this was an R-rated movie, right. So they could do that, which is kind of interesting. It's a huge hit for an R-rated movie, too.
Yeah, really intense for really pushing it with that. Because that kid was, like, what? He's, like, 5?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be, like, 5 or something. And, like, that kind of gore, that kind of, like, intense, gore of the child. I just don't think I can recall seeing that in a movie recently, if ever. That was just so brutal.
Yeah, it was good. Unexpected. I knew Georgie was a goner, but I didn't think they would show the arm getting ripped off and him without the arm.
Yeah, I mean, I knew he was a goner as soon as he started reaching.
Yeah, it's like, don't reach,
kid. I expect to see his arm get completely bitten off and then him dragged to the sewer.
Also, yeah, back to Skarsgård, his otherness with his vague Swedish accent kind of, I think, helped him. Because came at his dialogue sideways a little bit. It was sort of, his line readings were a little unexpected because he put pauses in weird places. I don't know if it's just because English isn't his first language, but he still had like a hint of his accent, I thought.
Yeah, that absolutely helped with, you said, his otherness.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember reading about that too. That... it just made him a little bit more alien seeming or unfamiliar in just the right way, because it wasn't even something you could, you know, it just seemed so authentic and manic because it was, like, it's not a native English speaker. Do you have any concrete examples of that happening, or like lines that you remember being like, oh, he sounds a little Swedish there?
Yeah, that first bit about like popcorn, because it's like popcorn. And then the take it.
Mm-hmm. Ah!
Yeah, that was the best stuff.
Pop, pop.
Yeah.
That was really well played too, because you notice how when you watch it again, I mean, without, it's very subtle again. Like, the only thing you hear is like, don't you smell peanuts? And like cotton candy? And then you kind of hear this very quiet circus sounds, ambience, just a hint of it,
right,
in the background. And then I realized after the second time, I didn't realize it the first time.
Oh, you saw it twice?
That, like, he's creating the smell of popcorn for Georgie to smell, right? I'm presuming that that's why Georgie goes, oh, it's popcorn.
Oh, yeah, he's trying to revoke it.
Is he... that, because you know how it always is creating these like sensory journeys for them. He's like, I'm going to make them feel this so I can create this entire hallucination and make them feel like they're being, you know, like having their fucking hair pulled into a sink drain.
Right.
He's next level.
He is. He has those skills.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Right. I have a question for you on a scene that occurred in the book that, let's just be honest, is really, really weird. And I want to know if you think that the sequel is going to, how they're going to handle it. It is, I'm just going to come around and say it's a child orgy.
Yes, a child orgy.
Which, my main question that stems from that is, why couldn't we just have them be adults and do it? Like, why does it have to be,
right,
you know, child orgy? Since we already saw chapter one, this was chapter one.
Mm.
I'm assuming that they probably aren't going to touch on it in the sequel. Assuming that it's just going to be divided between, you know, chapter that was the past, this is the present. Or is the movie going to, you know, maybe just incorporate that aspect when they're all adults? I don't know. What are we going to... Is the movie going to touch it at all, or are they going to put a bowl, or between a type of bowl, that whole concept?
Well, I think they kind of... they have this thing where instead of the child orgy, they have the kids, like, cut their, the palms of their hands with a fucking, like, shattered bottle glass that's just been in the forest, which seems super unsanitary. And it's, like, super jagged, too. I feel like, couldn't they just get, like, you know, like, a little, like, needle point to do, you know, the sort of blood brother thing or whatever. But no, they do, like, a jagged, you know, broken bottle, and they shred their hands, and they hold hands in a circle, and they pledge to never forget what transpired that summer, you know, of 1989. But yeah, I think that was sort of supposed to be the counter to the child orgy. The child orgy happens earlier than that in the chronology, though. It happens when they're lost in the sewers looking for Pennywise. No, they've killed Pennywise. They're trying to get out. Or not killed him, but they've driven him away. And yeah, and so to remember how to get out, they all have to take turns sleeping with Bev. And in the book, they're like 11. In the movie, they're 13. But it, like, 11-year-olds, like, you know, they're not even in puberty yet, most of them, right? So I don't know. I thought that was a strange choice by coked out Stephen King.
God, what the hell?
I don't know.
Quick note. When they're cutting each other's hands, do you notice how Bev is the only one who barely flinches?
Oh, she's into it? Or?
Well, she's not into it, I would say. She just doesn't flinch or, you know, like, suck her teeth the same way the boys do. They're all kind of like, ugh, you know? And she's just like, hm, and like blinks a little bit, and then her face kind of twitches, but she's like... I just thought that was a really beautiful moment to show how strong she is, especially in comparison to the boys.
I could see that. I didn't notice that, but that's pretty cool. I feel like there definitely were too many little kids, too. Like, we didn't need, like, seven kids. We could just have Bev, keep Ben, the little history kid. We can get rid of Stan. Stan's the most unnecessary character. He's barely in the miniseries, too. He just sort of pops in. But yeah,
he definitely didn't have much value. I mean, he was one of the kids who was like the foil to Richie, I think, right? He would just be like, no, dude, she's not hot, remember? Because Richie asked if the woman in the picture was hot.
Oh, not
no,
remember that.
She's not hot. Yeah, I think like he just didn't add, and especially since his fear was the lamest, he could be cast out for sure. I thought Ben was essential. I thought Eddie was important because he was kind of like the most obvious loser. The other kids could look at him and be like, you're the ultimate loser. You're definitely more lame than we are. And I just liked that way that he fit into their little circle.
Yeah.
Because of course then, you know, it's very clear that he becomes stronger and not in, he's definitely not as vulnerable as he originally thinks he is, and that's a cool little arc for him. That was essential, I agree. And Henry Bowers, let's talk about Henry for a second, because he was totally insane in the movie, and I think he's supposed to be equally sadistic in the book. This is the bully who carves, you know, who wants to kill a cat at one point, who carves his name into Ben's stomach.
And then, because of Pennywise on TV, he's compelled to kill his dad.
Yeah. And then, does he die at the end of chapter one of the movie?
Oh, yeah, I think he dies.
Yeah, he was, man, that kid was real messed up.
Yeah, like, I like how his dad friends were cool with, yeah, his dad sucked too, I agree. I like how his friends were okay with him carving his H, like the H of his name, into Ben's stomach with a knife. But now when he started to add other letters, you know, he wanted to carve in Henry, his full name, across the kid's stomach. And they were not down with that, but they were totally fine with the H. Like, what what is that?
I thought what happened was he couldn't carve anymore because he ended up, like, headbutting him, right? Or, like, kicking him or something, yeah, just, like, before he could even do any more letters. I don't think it was a, like, whether or not they were cool with different letters being, or the other letters being put into his belly skin.
Well, the kids, they say, what are you doing? Like, no, what do you, you know, stop. When he was starting to do the E, but they didn't protest for the H. They were holding him back. They're just questioning. They didn't stop him. They were probably going to be down with it, but they thought it was a little too far. But I'm not sure, like, where that line is for them.
Dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And then he kind of looks at him like, "Where are you?"
Yeah. And then the kid escapes.
Yeah, they're like, you're doing too much.
Yeah, the E is too much, but the H is fine.
Yeah, so I guess the last thing that I wanted to touch on with you is the overall, because this is one of the critiques that I had for the movie, other than Stan's kind of superficial fear and just kind of unnecessary character, I guess we've agreed upon.
Yeah.
I think the structure for me of the movie was imperfect because they, for example, I'm going to compare this to another movie that I think is just better done in terms of the, like, subtle horror, The Babadook. Babadook has a lot of really creepy images and just kind of impressions. And it's sort of like, it's a movie that really focuses on, like, what's in the shadows and things coming out of the shadows, or out of the dark. And I think that this movie, the way and, like, the kind of rhythm of each scene, I noticed that, first of all, Pennywise was just kind of everywhere at the end. I mean, there wasn't really any kind of, like, him coming out of nowhere. It was just seemed like he was just very, very present. And so for me, that just seemed a little clunky. I'm not sure if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get it. They don't really establish the rules for Pennywise in terms of, like, how much of, like, a ubiquitous, like, ethereal, like, demon presence he is, or if there's just, like, the one physical version of him and he can transform, but he can't be in a bunch of places at the same time. It's all kind of unclear, which in a way, like, it allows them to do stuff like that, where it seems like he's everywhere, but also, I mean, I guess he does, like, get into the TV for the game show and where he talks the Henry Bowers kid into killing his dad, which is great. That was a great little bit.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying, too, I think is that Pennywise, I think he lost his scariness the more we saw him. And I just started to become a little desensitized to, like, seeing him jump into different scenes. And I think that what made the Babadook so great was that, like, there were times where you'd almost see the Babadook, where there'd be, like, a 5-minute scene where there's no Babadook, or, like, there would be, you know, you'd see him, but it would be in these kind of, like, short flashes. And so there was this, like, intrigue about that character, which also was, like, a demon, right? But Pennywise was just, like, all over the movie, especially towards the very end. And I just don't think the, like, setup was as clever as it could have been for, like, the scares. You know, like, I just feel like there were, it just became kind of like a rhythm of, like, okay, here comes another scene. Okay, Pennywise is going to do the scary thing. Okay, like, you know, this is going to happen. It just seemed, it seemed a little bit
repetitive. Too, yeah.
Repetitive.
No, I agree. The structure
of the scenes.
Yeah, and also, oh, I had that sort of, I was watching Red Letter Media, which is an awesome film review show, and they were talking about this too. They had this sound effect where it's like an unreal sound effect. It's not part of the mise-en-scene. It's obviously like something engineered usually for trailers, but they actually have it in the movie where someone strikes like a drum or something. There's like a clanging sound every time like Pennywise appears or jumps out at you. It's like the stuff they have in a movie to represent what the fear is going to feel like when you're watching the movie. But in this, they actually just have that sound effect. It just, like, took me out of it because it was so cheesy.
Yeah.
Like, the clanging thing. You know, there's another silly,
creepy sound effect that I thought they overdid a little. I heard it, like, three times. And I was like, this is the kind of sound effect that you drop once in the movie and that you don't use again. Because if you use it too many times, and I think, again, it was, like, 2 to 3 times, so really not that many, but definitely was more than once. It was that it's the sound of like your heart dropping into your stomach, like you. And they use it when, oh my god, I'm getting chills right now. I'm just thinking about it. It's so scary. It's just so haunting. They use it when Mike opens the door, or the door flies open and Mike looks at Pennywise like feasting on human bodies, and Pennywise turns his head ever so slightly and locks eyes with, you know, well, it's the viewer at that point because it's through Mike's eyes. So he, you know, turns his head and then looks straight at the camera with like a hand in his mouth, and you hear it, it goes boo. And it's so effective because I just remember feeling like, oh my god, my heart, or my, like, you know, all of my organs that are on the top of my body just fell into the bottom of my body because I'm so scared and I might have to pee myself right now. And I love when good sound editing like really amplifies fears. Like there was a similar, I was talking with Tomas, but there's a similar effect in Get Out when, as oof, I'm forgetting his name. Wow. Chris. Yeah. I think Chris is being told to sink into the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And the mother character who's hypnotizing him, she's like, sink into the floor. And he's like, wait, no. And then she goes, sink. And like, as she's saying sink.
Yeah, they have the drop, the brr.
Yeah. so chilling. I think, again, good sound editing, good sound effects are like spare but effective and just like hit you in the gut. And it's exactly where that hit me. I just think that they used it again. If they didn't, then I'm wrong and shame on me. But I feel like I heard it a couple times and I was like, oh no, like don't use that like too many times, because then it just takes away from how, you know, chilling it is. And I think of it, that was kind of a symbol for how I felt it was towards the end of the movie, of like, okay, like they're using the same structure of these scenes every time. They're setting up the scares the same way every time. I kind of would like to just not see Pennywise for a good like 15 minutes and then have him just like come back in a more kind of subtle way.
I think a lot of it comes from having too many kids, but I think that,
yeah, they a lot do of kids. That. That's why I had to get, man, there we go.
I mean, the book is 1,100 pages, so I guess the kids all get their space in the book. But
right.
Yeah, the movie, it just doesn't, you don't need all the kids. I think they're trying to be loyal to it. And apparently it is pretty loyal to the book, generally, although
right.
In the book, like, the kids get terrorized by, like, movie monsters, like the Wolfman and stuff, which happens in the miniseries, too. So that's different. Some of the monsters are different, I guess. But structurally, like, it's sort of the first half of the book. Chronologically.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it doesn't, yeah, it feels redundant. Some of it gets repetitive. The scares lose some of their luster because they're structured similarly throughout. And yeah, too many kids.
Anyway, that's a pretty nitpicky thing, but I think overall, you know, it's more symbolic of another gripe that I had, which is just kind of like the repetitiveness. And yeah, I think if they're loyal to the book and that's a quirk of the book, then I guess that's okay. But there are some things I think that make cinema truly perfect or like truly great or brilliant and artful. And I think that this movie didn't fire off on all canisters for me.
Yeah, it was but not great.
It was great.
Oh, I don't know.
I would say it was great. I wouldn't say.
Go on.
I would say, you know, solid 8.5 for me if I had to give it a rating. I think Get Out's a 10.
What about on the 4-star movie scale? 0 stars through 4 stars, where 3 is good. 2.5 is okay.
Can I do half stars?
Yeah, yeah. Please do half stars. Yeah, 3.5 is very good. 4 is great.
3.5 for sure.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Because 4, if I can't go, you know, 4.5 out of 4, if I can't give extra credit, then giving it a full 4 stars is putting it on par with, like, again, I think what are perfect horror films, like Babadook, The Shining, another Stephen King, and Get Out. So, yeah, I would say 3.5. Solid 3.5 for me. 3.75, if I'm being generous.
3.75. Yeah, I agree. 3.5. It's about right. It was really good, but it's just, yeah, it was missing something. So our criticisms are not really supposed to denigrate the goodness and watchability of the movie. It's more just, we just want it to be great, and it's almost there. That's, I think,
yeah.
The ultimate takeaway.
Well, it's full of potential. Yeah, I mean, there were some really amazing performances by not only the child actors, but I think, like, far and away the best was Bill Skarsgård, because he just had so many quirks about him. I mean, God, his face, his eyes, like, his deep-set, oh, kind of buggy eyes, his very, like, subtle changing of intonation that kind of rendered him unfamiliar and weird-seeming, that helped with his character being, you know, an alien, and creepy. And yeah, I think like another really cool, just clever, well, like the manifestations of each child's fears being played out or shown in the way they were. And then also the fact that all adults awful. That was really well portrayed. And I know that that is a big, big part of the book, and also I'm pretty sure that he wrote it in response to real life events. Like, I think he was inspired by John Wayne Gacy to actually come up with the idea for Pennywise.
Oh, really?
Because I'm pretty sure John Wayne Gacy dressed up as a clown.
He did, yeah.
And yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. That is, I think, the Pennywise, like the specific origin of Pennywise being, you know, a child killer primarily, and a clown.
Interesting.
Was that it was based off of like something that Stephen King read about John Wayne Gacy Jr.
Did not know that. I just thought he was scared of clowns and was just like on a coke binge one week and just decided, you know what I'm going to do now? Write about an 1,100 page book about a space turtle and a space clown and a child orgy and just see where it goes.
Space turtle, totally weird. But I think like the clown being a scary is my last rumination and on theme here. The clown being a scary, murderous figure is kind of representative of like just child predators, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
that the fact that they have to try and build trust with kids, or like, the clown is supposed to be seen as someone who kids can trust and someone who's like happy and someone who's trying to just spread joy and be silly and again, like earn kids trust. That's what fucking pedophiles and child murderers and serial kidnappers do, is they manipulate, right? Like they manipulate kids.
Yeah. They offer them candy to get into the van, whatever. Yeah.
To be a stranger. So like that, it totally makes sense that Pennywise is a clown in that way. And then it totally makes sense that Pennywise is kind of an allegory for a child predator.
Yeah.
In general.
hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that's an awesome point. It's right? Like, it's a symbol of child trust that's just immediately sort of rotted. So yeah, that's awesome. That makes a lot of sense too, as to why it works so well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, clowns are for kids. It's not like adults are supposed to go to the circus right. and have a great time. It's more for kids. So right. it's targeted terror.
Yeah.
Built on a foundation of flimsy exactly. trust. Yeah. My God.
And, you know, I mean, like, Georgie, you can tell Georgie, like, when in their interaction, almost starts to trust him. And then kind of gets that, like, feeling.
Yeah, he has.
But ultimately, does end up trusting. Right, he reaches into the sewer. If he didn't trust him, he wouldn't have even reached into the sewer. He would have run away.
Yeah.
No. Also, notice how I mean, what was interesting too. I'm totally going back into this territory again. But like, when Bev tries to kill her dad and face up to her fear, right? She tries to speak. She tries to confront him. And take him down and reclaim her power, right?
Right.
That's Pennywise appears and abducts her and then writes in blood on the wall, if you try, you die. If you try, you know, to kill your fear or kill the thing that, you know, is raping you, literally is raping you, you will be, you know, become even more of a victim, which is kind of like, think about the way that people threaten, or that these child predators threaten their victims of, like, if you tell anybody, or if you try to cross me, you do real bad things to me. You know, there's that threat of, like, something really bad's going to happen to you if you tell anyone. Yeah. Crazy. Pretty deep movie.
Yeah, pretty deep.
So deep, bro.
So you've seen, how many Pennywise outfits have you seen thus far on Halloween? You saw the one.
I saw one get on the blue line, and I looked at him sideways, and I was just like, I just looked at him to see, you know, if he'd done the makeup well, and he really had, and had the costume to a T. It was like a really well done costume, and he had a red balloon too, and I just looked at that red balloon, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to dodge that. So yeah, I saw that penny. I'm sure I'm going to see more. I'm going to run away from them every single time, but I'll also be looking at them very intently just to make sure they're doing a good job.
Yeah.
But definitely keeping my distance. Damn.
Whew. That's yeah. It's
cannot, never liked clowns, but definitely cannot look at clowns in the same way ever again. I mean, I'm extremely excited to read the book. Semi excited to watch the miniseries after hearing your take on it, and really also very excited to see the sequel, Chapter 2, coming in 2019.
That's right.
Hoping to see Chris Pratt as grown up Ben and Amy Adams as grown up Bev, but you know, who knows if we'll get that.
And they should just do the Tilda Swinton thing. They should just bring her in as one of the incarnations or something.
Yeah, they should definitely. I mean, I've heard, and also after doing some research, that Pennywise is apparently, like, if you go back far enough into the, you know, space demon log, that Pennywise, or whatever, like, the history of, like, the being, Pennywise is actually a female and just manifests as a male clown.
Oh.
But is truly at its core a female entity, which is really weird. Like I think it's supposed to be like as a spider or something.
Yeah, in the end, it is sort of like this massive space spider crab thing in the miniseries.
Weird. Man, I want to see that.
It's worth. Okay, I mean,
watch that.
Yeah, you should watch it. It's
just for that.
Very strange. Very strange. the director, Tom Lee Wallace, has made some good stuff. He made a little scene Fright Night sequel, Fright Night Part 2, in 1988, so right before It. That's actually pretty good. So, it's not, anyway, the point is, like, it was a cumulative sort of miss across the board. A lot of people, I think, are to blame. And, it's not great, but worth watching and interesting. And Tim Curry's really good, so like, it gets some stuff right.
Yeah, all the love for Tim Curry. That man's amazing.
He has like a Brooklyn accent too, which is weird. It's like a thick Brooklyn accent for his clown.
Oh, this is so different from Pennywise 2017.
Yeah.
Like, he actually sounds more like a clown. So yeah, I am going to go get drunk in my corgi outfit and hopefully avoid any and all Pennywises.
Yes, good luck. Good luck in your endeavors to do that. Great chatting about It, terrifying film. And yeah, I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the miniseries, and we'll get that book club going soon.
Oh, show. All right. Stay safe out there.
That's right. Stay safe,
Happy
kids.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Film core.